Did you know there's an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC right to your door? And they found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients to create gummies, baked goods, and flower for whatever type of buzz you'd want. I'm talking about Mood.com. They have an incredible line of cannabis gummies, and you get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. This isn't some rinky-dink discount of 5 or 10%. This is 20% off your first order. Forget one-size-fits-all supplements that only get you high. Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood you're looking for. My favorite are the Sleepy Time Advanced gummies. That's right, those are for sleepy time. You know when you just can't fall asleep? Take these and they'll put you right in the mood. Beyond gummies, Mood also has a selection of flower, pre-rolls, bakery treats, and beverages. Listen, you can find gummies to just get you high pretty much everywhere these days. But Mood's functional gummies combine premium, federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get into the perfect mood, usually in as little as 15 minutes. And everything ships discreetly right to your door. No dispensary lines, no awkward conversations, just better days and nights delivered to your doorstep. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. So head to Mood.com, find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code SPECIALISTS when you check out to save 20% on your first order. Try it today at mood.com.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door. No insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
The Survivor Specialists are back, and today we are predicting the finale of Survivor 49 predictions and power rankings. I have, for the first time ever, I can't believe it's happening, I got Steven. You all might know him from Survivor, but we all really know him from Survivor Know-It-Alls, right? He's here, and he's ready to talk about this finale, two-time Survivor player, and he's got a book coming out. I really don't know what more this guy needs to do, but Steven, thank you so much for joining.
Well, first of all, I want to say thank you for having me, and it's been so cool to see what you guys have built up here, what you've built up here, you know, with the Survivor Specialists, just like, you know, I'm really kind of at a point where I did thought the Survivor podcast ecosystem was tapped out. You know, you guys created something new and great and like built a community around it. And it's been very fun to witness. Second of all, I want to thank you on air. And I was just thanking you previous to being on air, but I was like, you know what? This deserves public recognition. You gave my family some expert Disney advice. We just went to Disney World for the first time and you told us what week to go And it was so perfect. The crowds were thinner. The weather was beautiful. I don't know if I want to like share what week it was because I don't want the crowds to be more. But I feel like, I don't know. It's like, you know, if a bunch of like, you know, if a thousand other Survivor fans came, that would be great. So it was the week after Thanksgiving. And that was really ideal. It was great.
Yeah, you had messaged. I saw you had posted on Instagram saying, does anybody know this? And I talked about it on this podcast before that I had done Disney vacation sales for a little bit. And everybody knows me as a pretty big Disney adult. And I live in Florida, so we're only about 2 hours away. And you had posted and you were asking which week to do. And I was like, dude, the week after Thanksgiving, nobody takes vacation in anything. They're at work. They can't take off until the holidays. They can't justify it. And my wife and I normally go that week. We just couldn't this year because we're selling our house. And so we had to be able to put it on the market that week. And so we went the weekend before Thanksgiving instead. And I will tell you, I really wish that I was going the week after.
I have been to Disneyland. I went with Courtney Yates. We went the week of Thanksgiving, being like, oh, people are going to be this is obviously how amateur we were. People are going to be celebrating Thanksgiving with their families. They're not going to be at Disneyland. Like literally it was a half hour line to get a churro. I think that like, we went on like one ride, and we got a churro. And I think like that was it. That was it. So that was unpleasant, but this was very pleasant. And, I mean, it makes sense. Like our kids are young enough now where we can taking them out of school for a couple of days is fine. Like they're not going to like miss any learning. Yeah. So although it was humor week, we were kind of bummed that it was like humor week at my daughter's kindergarten. And so like now, I mean, she's very funny and we were like, this is going to really bring it home for her.
That will be a bummer if your daughter's like 15 and she goes to tell a joke and it's just not funny. Like, you're going to remember you brought her to Disney instead.
You know where it went wrong. Yeah. But you know, you go there that week, Gavin Whitson, maybe it is. I think that's his week. So I think that's maybe that's like the Survivor week at Disney is the week after Thanksgiving.
I'm telling you, it's the time to go. It really is. We got a super chat here, elite duo right here from Worth Playing For. Thank you so much for the super chat. Always appreciate those. Oh, wow. Yeah, Stephen, I'm pumped to have you here. And you got StephenFishback.com there as your name. So you got your book coming out.
It's become my identity, Bill. It's become I have been talking about Escape, my novel, so much. It's supposed to be within arm's reach. I've really had this problem before. Escape, my novel, so much that like truly it's become my identity. If you have not heard me talking about this book, that is some kind of miracle. But it is inspired by my various experiences with reality TV, both as a contestant and then behind the scenes. I've seen it all. And I was like, you know what? This is a story that hasn't really been told in kind of a true way, like what it really like, and also hopefully a funny way, and then hopefully a thrilling way by the end. So I tried to like combine my two favorite types of book, which is literary satire. And there's something like kind of upstairs, downstairs about a reality show where you have like the scheming machinations in the production tent that then affect like the scheming machinations among the contestants and how those kind of play off each other. But then of course you set a novel in the jungle, you know, something has to go horribly wrong. So it was challenging to write, but also very fun to write. And hopefully I worked really hard to make it enjoyable to read. So hopefully it is.
I'm excited for it. I told you that's how I originally messaged you. I said, by the way, like I'm excited for your book. We're going to be doing it for our book club that we do.
That's awesome. Well, listen, February, if you guys like it, let me know. And if you don't like it, I don't want to hear about it.
That's how I am with everything I do in my
exactly.
life.
Exactly. Yeah.
Every day. No, that's awesome. Is it multi POV or is it just one?
Yeah, it is. It is. And it starts with two. And the primary POVs, wow, already great questions. We haven't even started talking about Survivor. Are this sort of like has been 44-year-old reality contestant desperate to recapture his former glories, which you might think is based on me, but I'm actually 46 years old, so not me.
Good.
When
did you start the book 2 years ago?
Sorry? I started it like 10 years ago, and like 44 seemed impossibly old. And now I'm older than my 44. That guy's got, you know, he's really like dealing with some issues. But then the other POV is this producer who is kind of coming off her own traumas and like looking. And I think there's like such an interesting dynamic of like a person who is like trying to transform real human lives into a three-act story. That's something we'll talk about today, right? Like how like we're gauging what's going to happen in the finale based on the three-act story, something that's been a big part of this season with Juwan kind of comparing it in the very first confessional to, you know, the acts of a story. And so I think that's like such a weird and like kind of twisted way to like, you know, when, and what's interesting to me too about like the way that producers do this is like, they kind of like make, like they kind of appeal to your best self, you know, that are like, they like kind of get you to do things by like sort of like trying to like appeal to you as you want to be like, oh, you want to be like the hero of the story. Wouldn't you do this? And you're like, yeah, I would do that. Anyway, that's all about my book.
I love that. Were you did you watch Siberia when it was on?
No. What is that? Is that a fiction or nonfiction?
It was a fiction, but it was essentially based on Survivor, but it was like Survivor if it went wrong. It only got one season. It was on NBC maybe a decade ago, oh, 10 cool. p.m. slot. And it was pretty much about a reality TV show that goes wrong. Like, wow. And it was a cool idea. And it sounds like what you're talking about sounds like the version of that actually has a beginning, a middle, and an end, because that show left on a cliffhanger that we never got resolved because it never got picked up, which was miserable because I was like, it's pretty cool. I love reality TV, and I'm surprised we don't really see those things more often, like from the producer, from the like those types of points of view. I feel like it's a market that's kind of missed.
I agree with you, and I do think some of it is just like not a lot of people have been there, you know, and those people who have been there are like crippled by, you know, extreme contracts. And you know, I did like obviously consult a lawyer to make sure that I was not violating my contract, but also, you know, I didn't want this to be like, you know, screw you to Survivor, or like, you know, this is not about Survivor. This is about like reality TV. I mean, it's like such an interesting world. And honestly, obviously I was able to capture a reality TV contestant's perspective very well. I did a lot of research to get to learn about the production aspect of it. I've talked to like people in every part of it, like producers, camera people, audio people. And some of that stuff is like the most interesting, like mm-hmm. the audio guys hate the camera guys because the camera guys are all like hotshot glory hounds, and the audio guys they're like the guys who are like in the trenches, and like I'm dealing with like 10 different POVs and I'm like mixing it all together, and these like guys with their rigs like get their one like shot of a waterfall and act like they're, you know, the gods. And I just think that's like such a funny dynamic.
Yeah, no, that's really fun. And now the audio guys have an even harder time on Survivor because they have to get the take of Jeff doing the proper voice that he is.
The right accent, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Whatever he's been doing. We got Alexandra Alberts here. Escape book was pre-ordered, eager to read it.
Oh my gosh, thank you, Alexandra. That's amazing.
Yeah, I'm really excited for this. And I know you're doing a whole publicity tour, right? With Rick Devins. He has to get involved, of course. He can't just let anybody else have the spotlight.
I know. I was like, leave me alone. He's like, Fishback, I'm going to be at this bookstore that you're speaking at. I'm like, no, you're not invited. We're going to, you know, bar the doors. And they're like, no, I'm going to Kool-Aid my way in. Mm-hmm. I was like, well, we better just include him on the program.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah. As little drama as possible. So yeah, stephenfishback.com. You can find all of that information. And it was funny because you said
a great prelude at the top of the hour too. I mean, this is really great. Yeah, this
right.
Is
and yeah. You mentioned Disney, which I'm excited about. You know, that was good. I like to get the pat on the back because I know that there was a Disney employee who had reached out to you and said like, no, go the week before or whatever. And I was like, no, that's wrong. I was like, that's just wrong. Like as a person who goes for fun, not to work, it's wrong. Go after.
But everyone's got their, you know, but I do think now that I've been there, I feel like you were right because it really was perfect. And I can't imagine it being better because the crowds were really thin. And the weather was perfect other than like one torrential downstorm, but that's, you know, Florida.
Yeah. I mean, that's Florida, man.
Yeah.
That's Florida. Yeah. We go in May more often than not, and it rains pretty much every day. But yeah. You had said that the book is about reality TV, not really Survivor. Well, this podcast is about to be about Survivor and the finale that we have coming up. We're at the final five.
Wow.
So
we got here. We got here, Phil. We did it. We made it through this season. We slogged through it, and now we're here at the end at last.
I feel like the season got better in the post-merge. I do. And I feel like what ended up happening was because of the knowledge of 50, right? It's like the knowledge of 50, it has taken away some of the dramatic moments. Will, co-host, he's been saying that a lot throughout the season. So I got to ask, you gave the fishy to Sage this week, yes?
Yeah, I did. And I'll stand by that.
So
I'm willing to fight, you know, debate me.
I can't. Will, I was ready to come on here screaming last week after our recap. And Will said, I want to go first. I said, Will, you go first. And what he said made so much sense. And I'm sure that you have a similar take here of why Sage deserves the fishy for what she did last week. So what's Sage's path here now, though, now that she made the move?
Well, I mean, the problem is for Sage, and this is why so many people thought it was a bad move, is that like the overwhelming likelihood is that she goes out at five. Because she did get rid of that three-person alliance she has, you know, with Steven and Christina. And so, and it really seems like this group of Savannah, Rizzo, and Sophie wants to ride together to the end, which is kind of unusual, right? And they each kind of think that, I mean, it looks like Sophie has some awareness that maybe she has the least shot at winning out of that trio. So maybe she has, you know, some kind of epiphany next in the finale that she's got to like make a move against Savannah or Rizzo. Although, I'm excited to talk about each of these people because it's not clear to me that Rizzo has such an obvious win ahead of him. And same with Savannah, honestly. I mean, like, she's the one. It did seem like there were these two trios. Each of them was working together. You had Steve and Christina and Sage, and then you had Rizzo, Savannah, and Sophie. And that whichever one kind of like won that head to head was going to win, you know, win out and like make its way to the finale. And I was definitely rooting for that underdog group of Steven, Christina, and Sage to pull it out. You know, I desperately wanted that block of vote to work. You know, I think from having been the underdogs, Savannah and Rizzo now are very clearly the top dogs. And, you know, who doesn't want the underdogs to kind of pull something out, especially when they seem so hapless for a while. And then to see that frustrated, I think was really frustrating for a lot of viewers and for that to be Sage's decision. But that being said, you know, I think from Sage's perspective, you know, she's playing to win, or everyone should be playing to win. And there's two votes left, including that final six vote, final six and final five, three eliminations, including fire. You know, if she thinks that she'll lose to Steven and Savannah, and then especially if she thinks she'll lose to Steven, Savannah, and Rizzo, she has to take out one of those three people in that spot. And now I've seen people say what she should have done, this is a Galaxy brain move, is for her and Christina to put their two votes on Rizzo in the event that Rizzo doesn't play his idol, which they think he's going to play, but obviously they're wrong. Then that goes to a 2-2-1 revote.
That's a good point.
Yeah, it's a very, very smart move. And maybe that's the perfect move. But I don't want to like take away from someone else's like tough, thoughtful, strategic move because they didn't like pull off the Galaxy brain move that we've come up with, you know, as a community, you know, watching from our couches and being well fed. And so I think what Sage did was kind of the necessary hard thing to vote out Steven, who she thinks could beat her at the end when she has this opening, in the hopes that she'll be able to have a chance to get out Savannah. It's not even clear to me that getting out Rizzo was right here. I mean, where are you, Phil? Like, is Rizzo competitive to win?
Well, so this is where I'm conflicted on how I feel about the Sage thing. And we had Adam Klein on Thursday, and he pretty much was like, he's like, you're contradicting yourself. But I can't help myself because I feel like there's so many contradicting situations in the conversation around this. If Rizzo's not a threat to win,
right?
If she doesn't feel like Rizzo's a threat to win, I understand why you're taking Steven and why you're not putting votes on Rizzo.
Right.
But if Rizzo is a threat to win, is a threat to beat you to the point where you think you have to get rid of Savannah, Rizzo, and Steven, then you probably have to get rid of Rizzo in this situation because he's not part of your numbers at all. So if you go 2-2-1, or I guess it would be 2-2-1 because Steven would put his vote on Blue Sophie, now you ensure that like you're okay with Steven going home. And I think that's been the biggest mistake. There's been two big mistakes on this season. And I didn't even think about the 2-2-1, but now that it's in my head, this is where I'm thinking about this. There's been two big mistakes of when you're not the one in danger, when you know it can't ricochet to you. There's been twice on this season where people have not taken advantage of that. The first time was at Final 10 when they voted out MC, when Juwan and Sage put the votes on MC instead of forcing Rizzo to play his idol.
Yes.
If the idol gets played, MC goes home anyway, so you don't care. And then in this situation, that 2-2-1 does make a lot of sense. The votes aren't coming to you. You know, right, as Sage and Christina, you're not going to get the brunt of this. So who cares if people are pissed at you going back to camp? You know you're not the one who goes home. And I think that if you're going, obviously season 50 is aired, but if you're going on 51 or 52, that's something to always be aware of. Are you the one who suffers the most if you take a chance? Because that they didn't take advantage of those moments on this season in too many ways.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a very, very good point. And, you know, Tyson always said, you know, with the time you're wearing the immunity, I don't know if he always said it. He said it once. And I've been saying it. I've been quoting it. I always say, quoting Tyson, who said it once, you know, the time to make a move is when you have the immunity necklace. And that's basically kind of what you're saying, is this idea that, you know, if you're not the target, you have a little bit of leverage, you have room to maneuver, you have room to take a swing. I mean, of course, the counter argument is, you know, it's not chess pieces, right? You take a swing at someone and it blows up in your face and they're mad at you. And then then you know, it's human emotions that you're playing with here. And especially, you know, on certain seasons, and especially new player seasons, right? Like, people will do things because, I mean, this season seems to be very emotionally driven. People will do things because they're mad, or they'll find a strategic reason to do it because they're mad at you. I mean, certainly you can see Sage voting out Yellow Sophie here as like, you know, yes, it's strategic and it's personal, but like, which came first? You know, I mean, did you find the reason that it was strategic because it was personal, or did you like go along, you know? So I do think, I mean, but I do think you're right. I mean, there are a few key points where this underdog group really screwed up. The MC vote is one. I mean, I, you know, go back to voting out Nate instead of Savannah or Rizzo. Yeah. Like, that was a huge flub, where they had this element of surprise. They really could have gotten any three of those, and they kind of went with the safe vote. In that episode, it was kind of articulated as being Christina's vote, or Christina's idea. She wanted the conservative thing. Maybe Steven did too, because it would have like blown up in his face. Anyway,
which again, that's one where if you're Steven, you don't want to take the risk there because he did get the other four votes. But if you're,
right.
If you're, you know, Sage and Jawan and all that, it's like, you have a 7-4 anyway, screw Steven. Like, take your chance.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So. No. And it was, you had the element of surprise and, you know, say, and I think like the way they did that episode was like, they had Christina making the case for Nate. They had Jawan making the case for Rizzo, and then Sage making the case for Savannah. And, you know, I'm sure it was more fluid than that. I'm sure like they were all kind of debating it, but it sure looked like Rizzo and Savannah were the right ones. And that's definitely been borne out by the way that alliance has flourished.
Yeah. So, okay. So do you think that Rizzo actually has a chance to win this game right now? If he gets the final three, can he win?
That's the real question. I mean, you know, Steven in his exit press kind of said no, right? He said like he wasn't really thinking about Rizzo. He wasn't getting like a lot. Rizzo was not getting a lot of respect for his strategic gameplay. And some of his idle theatrics were going over badly with the jury. Mm-hmm. And that was my instinct, honestly, watching those things, is like when you're making a show and it's all a show, you know, the jury's sitting there like they're mad, you know, they don't want you to be like look at me, you know. And I remember like going before Survivor 23, Coach said that if he got to the end, he was going to like stand up at Final Tribal Council, mm-hmm. you know, and like make a real presentation to the jury. But when he did get to the end, he didn't do that. And the reason, I mean, obviously he lost anyway, but the reason you don't do that, I mean, I guess arguing from the loser's perspective. The reason you don't do that is because like, you know, the jury's mad, right? They're mad at you.
Yeah.
You put them there. You want to like appeal to them. You want to like talk about, I mean, you know, and when we talked about, you know, players who play the jury well, they're always like deferring to the jury, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, Cochran always made a point of like, you know, he told me he always made a point of like referring to the jury in his answers, you know, so that they felt like they were still a part of the game. I remember Wentworth in Cambodia, she would always be like checking in with us, like kind of like, what do you guys think about this? You know, like making us feel involved with it. And I think what Rizzo's kind of like grandstanding does is like, it's a little off-putting, you know, you want the people who eliminated you to be a little humble, you know, you want them to suffer. And like, you know, all the theatrics, I don't think, and especially from someone who's a little bit younger, I think it might be off-putting a little bit. So I don't know. I mean, like I would have liked to say that Rizzo had a great chance to win, but who's voting for him? You know, who are the Rizzo votes that are
the on people the sitting still in the game with him? Savannah and Sophie probably vote for him, right? But he has to get rid of them in order to get their votes, which probably doesn't happen at this point.
And is Sophie even voting for Rizzo? Like she talks about Rizzo a lot, but we haven't actually seen a lot of their connection, I don't think.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, yeah, when you look at that jury, Nate, maybe
Nate, like, I mean, I'm actually looking at the jury, like truly like who, like is Yellow Sophie? I don't think so. I don't think Jawan and Sage are voting for Rizzo. I mean,
Alex.
Yeah. I mean, maybe Jawan is kind of like a game respects game kind of thing. I don't know, but it's like, it's not obvious who would be voting for him. So I'm not high on Rizzo's chances to win.
Yeah. I think what's fascinating about the Rizzo situation right now is I feel like as an audience, we've seen Rizzo play a good game. I think holding the idol has been impressive. The fact that he hasn't had to play it. I think the lie of Final Six, which Sophie Bellardi is saying was her idea, but we can get into that. But like, you know, the lie of Final Six is when the idol could get played. And Adam Klein was losing his mind over that. He's like, I would never believe that. I'd ask to see the note. There's no way, because it's always been Final Five, but still like, that's a good lie. It worked for him. And I think that the moves he has made have been good, but the non-moves haven't been as good. And that's what the jury seems like they're going to be focusing on maybe a little bit more. So I find it I find it strange, but I also feel like if he gets to the end, he's in that weird position of like, you have a group of six friends and you're the second best friend of everyone. You're not anybody's best. You're not the best man for anybody, but you're always towards the front of the groomsmen. That kind of seems like where Rizzo is right now, where you could go down that jury with who's left in the final five. And you could say they're either going to vote for Savannah or Sage or Sophie Bellarity before they're going to vote for Rizzo. I don't know where people stand on Christina because we've barely seen Christina, but maybe there's even people who'd vote for Christina over Rizzo and surprise people, kind of like a Heidi situation in 44 where she got more votes than Carolyn.
Right, right. I mean, I would be suspicious of that. I mean, because I don't think, people thought Heidi played a really strong game. I mean, she aced that fire making competition. You know, we don't know what's going to happen in fire. But I do, you know, we've heard even, you know, Christina's best ally say, what a messy game player she is. So I don't know. I don't think Christina, I mean, listen, not getting any votes. I can't say anything. There's anything wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that. But that's the position I see for Christina. I mean, there's a world where Christina loses at fire too, where, you know, you do have this trio of Savannah, Rizzo, and Sophie who all go together to the end. I mean, my like headcanon is that it's, you know, Savannah, Sophie B and Christina sitting there at the end. I think that, Sophie B kind of has a losing, there's like this classic losing finalist edit now where the character is like a huge part of the pre-merge and then they kind of like disappear in the post-merge. And it's almost like almost every season you have that. Actually, like I think Heidi was someone who had that edit, like Ben on Survivor, whatever season that was, 46.
Yeah, 46,
I mean, there's like almost very frequently in the 40s, there's been this one character who's just been like a giant. Sue in 47. Yeah. Honestly, you could even argue like Joe in 48.
Yeah, I mean, Joe's edit was huge in the beginning of that game, and then it fell off.
Yeah. And they end up kind of like setting the tone of the season, but they end up not really having a huge impact in the post-merge or the finale. So I think that's kind of my read of Sophie. I mean, are you guys talking about who's on 50? Is that like, is
this a, very openly?
Yeah. I mean, we haven't been talking about that in our hat because we do get listeners who don't want to know who's on 50. But you know, I think we were kind of like semi spoiled on Savannah being a potential winner just because the two other winners and then she's the third tribe. And I do think that's kind of like hurt our enthusiasm for her this season, but you kind of got to think she wins at this point. Cause like, there's also like a very viable argument for like, it's a why Savannah lost season, you know, because she has like so many, you know, toxic relationships, you know, Sage is mad at her. Christina's mad at her. You know, but I don't think that's actually enough people to lose a game. You know, you still got Nate is probably rooting for her. Sophie is rooting for her. Other Sophie is, you know, BFFs with her. Like Steven doesn't seem to have anything against her. You know, Alex probably not mad at her. So it's like, you know, you look at the actual jury and if Rizzo's on the jury, obviously he's voting for her. So I feel like Savannah wins pretty handily here.
I feel like I put out the Instagram post this week because I've been saying Sophie Bellarity, Sophie Bellarity, Sophie Bellarity. I think I've been in denial where, you know, I saw the season 50 tribe breakout and I said, no. Supposedly she replaced Marianne. It's just because Marianne was a winner, but they had to put woman, you know, replacing woman. So it doesn't matter. Like, don't look too much into it. And I kept doing it. And like, honestly, Sophie Bellarity's edit, I felt like was very good for a while there. Yeah. And then I said, she still has the knowledge as power. She hasn't had to make a move. She kind of did a little bit of a Gabler thing where in the post merge, she kind of disappeared for a little bit, but here she comes. It's time to strike. And after what she did last night, I said, all right, this is Savannah's. I can't even be in denial about it anymore. I feel like the game is over. And I think the other thing is Savannah is being very underrated, I think, right now as a player, because it almost feels like a foregone conclusion. Right?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, the twist of the movie before you watch the movie. So then when you see the twist, or you know the movie has a twist, like nowadays you can't tell people to watch Usual Suspects because even if they don't know what the twist is, they know that there is a major twist.
Right.
And then it feels like a letdown when they watch it because they say, well, I knew a twist was coming. Well, you didn't know in 1996, okay? And so I feel like that's what's happening with Savannah here. We never got a chance to see it without knowing. And look, she could still lose the game, right? If she goes out at 4, it makes sense. She's coming back, right? If she ties the record for female immunity wins, she's on a season now with people like Colby, with Chrissy Hoffbeck, like it would make sense. But it just feels like if she sits at final 3, even with some of her less nice antics as people are being voted out, she's going to get the credit for the game that's been played.
Yeah, I think that's such a perfect analogy to like watching the movie, knowing the twist, and you're like, yeah, okay, like that's obvious. Like now it's like, what, you know, so what? Who cares? That's a really, really great analogy because that's exactly right. And she's done a lot that's really, really good. You know, a lot has been made in recent weeks about her, you know, kind of like friction with other contestants. But she was the people part of that. She was the person who other people were attracted to, right? Like Sophie, when she came over, Blue Sophie was like, you know, Savannah is so great. Like, I just feel like she's my sister, you know? She and Rizzo obviously have this bond. You know, she and Nate were always seen strategizing together. So, you know, I really think that like she is someone who people are like compelled by. And sometimes that takes like a positive, you know, feeling, and sometimes it takes a negative feeling. But she's got like obviously this like this energy or this dynamism around her. And you know, I think that's something that, you know, she's the one who's kind of like kept her alliance together, I think, right? Like that a lot, yeah. You know, Rizzo's connected to her, Sophie's connected to her. So I feel like she has a good case of like, I'm the head of this alliance, like I am the head of this group. I'm the one who you were all targeting, right? I'm the one who's absorbing all these bullets. I dodged those bullets every single time by winning immunity when I had to. And I think the very fact that there's this narrative of her as being, you know, the target, the one to get out, the one who's like running it, you know, you kind of, if that person makes it to the end, you kind of have to give it to them. I mean, you don't actually have to give it to them, but there's something there, you know, you're like, yep, we tried to get you out. We didn't, like, good for you. Like that was our mission and we failed. And so I do think, I mean, I too, you know, still saw for a while, like a Sophie B world. I do think the last episode was like, it's so much made the case. Like, Sophie has to do this thing and then didn't do the thing. And then even the thing she did try to do kind of blew up. And obviously that's not like an edit, but the edit really did say like, she should steal Rizzo's idol. Don't be, you know, what is, you know, your grandma think, you know, your grandma wants you to steal Rizzo's idol. And then for that not to happen, I do think is kind of like bad for her chances. And also in a lot of recent seasons, the winner has really emerged in the finale, you know, as this kind of, you know, certainly Erica, obviously I don't know if that counts as a recent season, but Erica, and like really.
That doesn't count as a Survivor season in my book. So everything else counts. The other 48 seasons of Survivor are real Survivor. That's not real Survivor. But
so then let's talk about Gabler. Obviously no one's talking about Gabler coming. Yeah. That's the real, you know, but a lot, I mean, you know, no, I mean, Jam D, they were all sort of present throughout.
Kenzie versus Charlie. I mean, that was very much up in the air.
Right.
So yeah, I feel like with Savannah too, we're in this world of everybody wants villains ever since Jeff said we can't have villains. You know, it's always like you want what you can't have. And then as soon as Savannah does anything even remotely controversial, it's like she should lose her job. She's a bad person. I hate her so much. But like the thing is, at the end of the day, you compare her to what Russell was doing in Samoa, like they're not in the same ballpark. They're not even remotely close in terms of villainous, whatever the hell the word is.
Yeah. And Russell was really like the benchmark for a villain. I mean, whatever. There are those who have surpassed Russell, but like, you know, not really in like the top tier of the franchise.
Yeah, exactly. And also like not in a way that audiences were actually rooting for him, right? I feel like other villains that have been villains are villains because we're like, yeah, that's not a good person. And like Russell definitely had some of those traits, but we're still rooting for Russell. And I think he even gets three votes in that season. Savannah hasn't done anything even remotely close to what he's done. So if she sits at the end and she makes a good case, I mean, look at the villains tribe from Heroes versus Villains. Most of those players are winners.
Yeah.
Savannah could win the game and I wouldn't be shocked at all. I just, for the longest time, didn't see the edit because I felt like it was being set up as Savannah's a good villain. The show needs villains. She's causing some chaos. So we're going to do this. At this point, I'm kind of the belief she's probably going to break the female record, tie the men, get five immunity wins, sit at final three, do great. And then I wouldn't be surprised because of the way the challenges are set up nowadays. I wouldn't be surprised if she gets on to the next season and is actually one of the weaker players on her tribe, which is the irony of all ironies, right? But like, I could see that happening. It's like Colby in Heroes versus Villains. He sucked at challenges in Heroes versus Villains.
Yeah.
But he was the icon. He was the king of challenges going into
this. Well, I mean, listen, Cochran won three challenges on Survivor 26. And it's because, you know, I mean, obviously because he's a challenge beast, but also because he was going against, you know, Dawn. I mean, it's like, you know, it's a lot of it is like, and you know, Sherry, I guess, like, you know, and you know, some of the challenges are, it's a lot of it is who you're competing against and what the challenges are. I mean, you know, Savannah is obviously very well suited for some of these end game challenges that are like really, you know, endurance and balance based. Where are you? Like, if someone broke the record, I would seriously, because contrary to what you might think, like I do rate challenges as a part of the game. You know, it's a part of the game. It's literally part of the game. So like, while I would always like favor a strategic player, if someone broke the challenge record that had like held for, you know, 28 years or whatever it is now, I guess 25 years. I should know that. 25 years.
Kelly Wiggles did it for the women in season one. So
would you vote for a challenge beast, like a record breaker, or would that like factor in your decision? Or are you like, whatever, I don't care about challenges, I fast forward through the challenges?
No, I think the challenges are very important. I think that that's one of the most undervalued things in today's game. And I think that honestly, like the way the show is edited and the way the show is filmed now, they almost want you to think that they're an afterthought because the challenges almost mean nothing. Like I was complaining how season 48 was all how strong are your upper body? How strong are your muscles? Every challenge post-merge felt like it was testing your biceps. And Shaheen has the confessional of, I need them to test my legs. And then he's gone by the time they do it. This season, it feels like everything is testing your hips and your legs. And I'm not going to knock Savannah for being good at the challenges that they're putting in front of her. Good. Go win your challenges. Right. Good for you. But I do feel like the show has made it seem like challenges shouldn't matter. And obviously the online discourse is always that challenges are bad. I think Tom Westman might have the most impressive win in the history of the show. And he won 5 immunity challenges and won every immunity challenge pre-merge. I love Terry Dietz. I'm a huge Terry Dietz fan. Mm-hmm. And I've always talked about Terry as a great Survivor player. And people are like, he was an idiot. He couldn't do anything with the idol. It's like, but he made it to final three. Like he still got there. And it's not his fault that he was playing with people that were immovable. He couldn't do anything about that based on the way that season played out. Mike Holloway, he kind of put himself in the position that he put himself in. Whereas Terry was kind of just put in that position because his tribe lost more and we were still playing old school Survivor. So I think it's a case by case basis, but like, I get why Sarah beat Brad in Game Changers, but I'd vote for Brad if he played I think you have to look at it as well-rounded. And I just think challenge beasts have gotten overshadowed because, you know, they don't really generally win.
Right. And I do think you're right. Like it's like, and people are saying in the chat, you know, like Sylvia 8949, like Savannah saved herself many times, you know? I do think like there's that element of it. It's like, if you are saving yourself, then it kind of, you're kind of like, yes, like I've got to give credit to that. Whereas if you're just like winning challenges and nobody's targeting you anyway, you're like, okay, like if you weren't really a part of this game. But Savannah is keeping herself in the game and her alliance intact. Like the challenges are the baseline for her strategic gameplay. And so like, I think that it's like if you play an immunity idol at the right time, you know, I mean, just because like, you know, immunity idol is a scavenger hunt. Like is a scavenger hunt more impressive than a challenge win or, you know, some of the way these immunity idols are handed out. It's like, what, like how did you deserve that? You know?
Yeah.
Like you found that in a tree. Like you just happened to pass the right tree that the camera was pointing out.
I get you. My favorite is always Lauren O'Connell thinking it was a sock.
Right.
And it was the immunity idol. She thought it was a sock. So she just picked it up and she's like, oh, somebody left their sock and it was the immunity idol. It's like, oh, it's crazy. And look, I mean, I feel that at this point, I agree with you. Like, what is more impressive? Rachel, who Dom Abate is going on the internet saying played the greatest game he's ever seen, or, you know, one of the greatest games he ever seen. She was saved by Safety Without Power.
Right.
Like, is that more impressive than winning? I mean, and I think I always say this. It's like being in a basketball game. If you hit the game winner, you had to be in position to hit the game winner. Right. So if you go on an immunity run where you win like 3 or 4 in a row,
right,
you had to be in position to still be in the game to win 3 or 4 in a row. Like, does Fabio deserve to get knocked for being the last standing from his alliance? No, I don't think so.
Right.
Although nobody's ever going to say anything nice about Fabio except for this podcast. So
yeah, I was rooting for Fabio. Sash too, obviously. Sash played a great game. And Sash really did play a great game. But I was excited about the Fabio win. And Chase has done well for himself too. But it's interesting. Like, you just have to get so lucky, you know, to win Survivor, and so many things have to break for you. And, you know, I think what to say, like, one skill set is better than another. You know, I think I was reading Shannon Gus and she was like, Rachel played the best like underdog game ever. And like, I think that's right. Like, there's different types of games. To say like one type of game is better than another, like I've always said, ranking is arbitrary and reductive. But like there's different kinds of games and there are different like kinds of ways people get there. But like, even just to be on a tribe with people that gel with you, like that's like where, like that's the most crazy piece of insane luck. And I've been in both situations, you know, in a group with people who somehow I gelled with and a group of people I didn't. Nothing to do with me, right? Like, I mean, it's just like, who's cast with you? Like, who's similar to you? Who's not? Like, who has cultural similarities to you or cultural differences that, that you connect with, you know? And it's not always something you can predict. It's not obvious who's going to connect with who. Like, obviously, like, some of the game's best connections are not, like, straightforward. Like, why are Savannah and Rizzo a pair? You know, nothing about them makes sense. And, I mean, Rob C is always saying, you know, we don't really understand that alliance. You know, we never see them talking about each other. Like, what is it? Like, that's the real question. Like, what, like, connects those two? It just kind of is like, they happen to be together. They happen to have this unbreakable bond. They'll never turn on each other.
Yep.
What do you think? Do you think that, like, in the finale, either of them turns on each other?
I don't think so, because I don't think Savannah needs to, and I think Rizzo thinks he can beat her too. I think they both feel like they can beat each other, and I feel like we, the show we're watching, I think the edit is telling us that Savannah has the edge over Rizzo, but I do feel like, I don't feel like they need to flip on each other. I think Sophie Bellarity could flip on them, because I think after Sophie Bellarity, as she said, got embarrassed at the last tribal council, she realizes that if she goes to the end with them, she's going to lose. To one of them, at least. But I don't think Savannah or Rizzo really know where they stand on the hierarchy. Now, could we see them pull a situation like Dom did in Ghost Island where he says, Wendell, I'm putting you up anyway? We could see that, sure. Like, why not? For fire, but you're still giving your person a chance. And honestly, at this point, putting your closest ally up for fire actually ends up doing them a service rather than a disservice more often than not, because if you put them up against the right person, they get one last thing to go, check, yeah. I have you beat there. And we saw Wendell get maybe a vote or two. We saw Maria see the fire in Kenzie's eyes. It happens.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Like, quite literally see the fire in Kenzie's eyes. Yeah, it's interesting. It really is interesting. It's, I mean, I kind of think, like, my narrative in my head is that Sage, what do you think? Sage out at five? Is Sage out at, or like, that's kind of my vision, that she now has nobody and they're just like, yeah, Sage. Does Sophie B finally make a move?
So let's rank this, because I like to do the power rankings part, even though we're kind of openly discussing it. But let's talk about this, because so the patrons who are playing the power ranking game this week, you want to get everything as right as you can. If you're off, if Rizzo gets fourth and you put him in third, you lose a point. You can't gain points this week. You can only lose. The scoring on Real TV Fantasy is not the way we do it. So I'm just telling everybody that now. But so that is, I think, the question, right? You're trying to be exact here. So if you were coming into this episode, are you saying Sage is five? Is that where you're going?
I think so. Like, I do. I mean, you know, part of me just would, my dream would be a Sage win. You know, I would love, I mean, whatever. I don't want to say that, because then God, these people, first of all, before we even get into this, these are the most, like, I guess not litigious, but like social media tigious, like contestants I think I've ever seen in a finale in terms of how four out of the five of them are just nonstop justifying. They're like, you know, calm down. You're in the final five. Like,
who's not spread. Justifying their game, Steven?
Sorry?
Who's not justifying their game?
Sage, I think, is pretty quiet, right?
Maybe she's the winner then.
Well, that's what I thought. And then someone posted on Twitter, Lyle posted on Twitter, like a screenshot of something she'd posted on Instagram, which sounded a little like did not sound like someone being sanguine and quiet. It sounded like someone who had a, but like, honestly, like I, for a moment I was like, maybe she does win, because she's like not out. Like, it usually is the person who's like the most quiet, who wins, you know, because they're like, they're the one who doesn't want to screw, you know, doesn't have it to prove anything. Doesn't want to, like, you know, mess up their contract, you know, although like maybe like, you know, it's possible that Rizzo or Savannah, if they win, but come off of 50 feeling humbled, that they would feel like the need to, you know, kind of like prove themselves here. Like, look at me, I'm doing so good. Don't you understand? I'm great. You know, right before something bad happens to them in the next season.
Wishful thinking. That was that right there, Steven. What was
not
that?
At all. I have no, the only wishful thinking I have is that Devin's Emily or Christian win season 50. I mean, that's my wish. What was I talking about? Oh, yeah. Okay. So anyway, these people, like, I'm like nervous saying anything lest it be like, you know, quote tweeted back to me with some, like, you know, angry message from a current contestant. But I do think Sage is five. And I think a lot of people are going to be like, Fishback, you moron. How could you have given her the fishy last week? Obviously, this was going to happen. I gave her the fishy knowing this was probably going to happen. I do think Sage was five.
And I appreciate what you're saying here, because this is how I always view the game. It's like, I kept saying the whole time that I thought Juwan and Sage, they made the wrong move at 10, but then I didn't necessarily think they made the wrong move at 9. And then when Juwan went home at 8, everybody was like, see, you're an idiot. I'm like, well, no, I never said that that meant they were going to win. I just said that, like, I don't necessarily think that was the nail in their coffin. And then you see what happens in the next episode. look, only one person is going to win, but I have to talk about who I actually think has winning potential. I actually think going into this episode, Sage has the second highest winning potential out of any player behind Savannah, but I also agree with you. She's going to finish fifth place because if she gets to the end, I think she gets the votes. I think she actually could beat Savannah in some situations because I think Jawan would vote for her. I think Steven would respect the move that was made and vote for her. I think that there's a couple people on that jury who would vote for her. And I think Sage is one of those people who, are you an Australian Survivor fan or no?
I am a fan, but not a viewer.
Okay. So exactly. But like could pull a Christie for example, where it's like, whoa, I don't know how the hell you just won, but also like, wow, you played a really strong, you had a really strong final tribal council that explained your game so well. I could see Sage doing that because I was saying the whole time at the beginning of the season, I thought Sage was a terrible casting choice. I was like, she's boring. She talks about poop and pee and whatever. I don't get it. We're going for this weird, quirky, whatever. And all of a sudden she started to play the game and I said, oh man. And I always talk about how if you are underestimated and then you prove yourself to people, they're more likely to vote for you than if they're disappointed by you.
Totally.
And I think Sage did a great job of elevating herself in a way that I never thought was possible. And if she can get through it, she wins. But right now, let's say Savannah wins immunity, like I think she will. Rizzo has his idol. Who is Sophie Bellarity voting for? She's voting for Sage, not voting for herself. And they're not going to vote Christina out of the game. Sage is gone.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I do think Sage, I mean, Sage's win is probably sitting next to Sophie Bellarity and Christina, right? As these two people who she can say, like, you guys didn't really do very much. And like, it's less like who's voting for Sage than who's not voting for the people sitting next to Sage. Although I, again, like, I think, I mean, like Sage was at the, you know, the center of the game for a lot of this, like she and Jawan were making most of the decisions like throughout the post merge, you know, in terms of like going back and forth between sides. Now, those, we don't always agree with those decisions, but they were making them. And that's the important thing. But I do think that that trio is staying together. I think that with Steven out of the game, there's every reason to think that Savannah wins at least the next one. You know, although you never know, right? With, you know, I would have bet on Ricard beating Erica, but then Erica got that crazy advantage. And
they are doing some sort of hunt for an advantage based on the preview and the description of this episode coming up.
Yeah, I was bummed for Ricard with that. I mean, I do like Erica as a winner, but like I felt like that, you know, Ricard had played. We don't need to relitigate season 41.
Honestly, man, if season 41 had just never happened, what a glorious world we live in. They would have just started over at 43 and just skipped 41 and 42. And I actually do enjoy 42, but
42 is great.
But the fact that they use the same twist, it's like, oh my God, what are we doing? And I feel like, so here's my question to you. Savannah loses immunity. Let's say somehow, some way, it's Sophie Bellarity who wins it. Okay. Right. Sophie Bellarity or Christina. Okay. I know these aren't likely, but let's say it's one of them. Who does Sophie Bellarity vote for? Does she go with Rizzo and Savannah and vote for Sage, or does she go with Sage and Christina and vote for Savannah?
Yeah. I mean, that is such an interesting question. I wish we had the opportunity to see it. You know, in my heart, I want Sophie. Especially after her knowledge is power kind of blows up, I feel like she has to recognize I've got to get out Savannah here. You know, she has to kind of have that awareness, right? Like, I've got to make this move to have done something. You know, and even like last episode when she plays her knowledge, and A Cook 2080 says, I think Trace Letches got her hooked. I mean, that was certainly the narrative of last episode, right? Was that this is my group now. I've got to like ride or die with them. I'm a loyal person. I'm a loyal person has been what she said from the beginning, you know, which when she, that was her pitch to Alex, was that I'm a loyal person. I think didn't she put it out, Alex?
Yeah. Well, I mean, Alex kind of abandoned her. We'll tell you, know, I can't wait for the post game press of like, why did Sophie and Alex never become friends again?
But, yeah, that was weird. I kind of like would like to think that like maybe then she still thought, well, I've got my knowledge of power. That's going to impress people on the jury. I'm going to steal Steven's advantage. Like, that's going to be my big move. So I'll have something to say, you know. And then when that kind of has like the sad trombone moment, like that she then recognizes I have to do something, like that's my hope for her. We'll probably never see it because Savannah will probably win immunity.
So now, okay. So we're in agreement there. Sage is probably getting fifth place.
Yeah.
I think four is where it gets interesting.
Yeah.
Because.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. No, I think we have the same question. So go ahead.
Right. So we're assuming Savannah wins.
Yeah.
Which I think is probably pretty likely. Because, like, who really in that four? I mean, the other three have not been so strong in challenges. Then who does she take, right? Does she take her loyal ally, Rizzo, who they've been together since the beginning? Does she take Christina as kind of like this person she knows she can beat? But then I think that's kind of a weak move, right? Because like then you're, well, I don't know. It's tough because then you're giving that other person, you're giving them a moment for sure. If you take Christina, like you're kind of humbling the person that has already been humbled a little bit. So like, why do that? Like if and then you've got Rizzo and Sophie B. I mean, maybe she takes Rizzo because like that is sort of like proving to everybody that he was like number two. And then kind of like whatever happens with Christina and Sophie B, I don't really care. I don't know. Where are you?
I don't think she takes Christina. I think Christina is making fire. Yeah. I really do. I think it's happening because taking Christina might seem like the right move, but why are you letting Sophie B or Rizzo get one more feather in their cap? There's got to be one of them that you're thinking of getting rid of.
Right.
So now does she view Rizzo or Sophie B as a bigger threat to her game? I actually think she might
think Sophie
take Sophie B.
Because Sophie has better jury connections than Rizzo does. Like she might have clocked that Rizzo is, but then Rizzo making fire. I mean, if Rizzo makes fire and wins, and then loses the game, like that would be a frustrating. You know, that would be frustrating as a viewer because they've like made him. I think Rizzo has to lose at fire, right? Like because like I feel like he can't get to finale having won fire. I mean, I guess that would be like a very interesting final tribal. Like what a good like battle between these two. But I've always had Rizzo losing at four, to be honest with you. Like or like going out like losing at fire.
I could see it. I mean, this is where I think it's interesting though, because could we get all three into the final three? Right? Could we get that trio into the final three? That would mean Christina would go here. But you know, if you're putting Christina in a fire, the likelihood is she would lose next to whoever she's sitting next to. I don't know if Christina's good at making fire. I just know she hasn't been good at the other challenges. So I would probably assume that Christina's also not going to be great at making fire.
But have we seen like any of them do fire in any capacity? Like, I don't know. I feel like I've not. This season. Yeah. Normally we get like people making fire, like, but we really haven't seen anything of that. I have no idea who could be in fire or who would be good at fire or who's been making the fires around camp. Yeah.
I'm going to just so that we're different. So you're going to say Rizzo's fourth.
I don't know. I really don't know here, Phil. What are you going to say? And then I'll choose something different.
I'm going to go Christina. I'm going to go Christina and I'm going to say Christina gets fourth place because Savannah wins. She takes one of her friends and she puts somebody else in there. I think either Sophie B or Rizzo are making fire against Christina and they win. And that becomes, does that do enough to get them a vote or two to steal from Savannah? Probably not, but I'm going to go Christina.
Gosh. I mean, does Christina have enough of a finalist story for her to be there in the final tribal? I mean, you see typically like the final three do have like a real.
Not recently.
Really? Okay.
Last season, yes, because of Joe, Eva, and Kyle, but the season before was Sue. The season before
Sue had a very big story pre-merge. Sue was like a shockingly big part of the pre-merge to the point where people were predicting her winning. And then it was Sue, Rachel, and who else? Oh, Sam.
Sam had a great at it. Yeah.
And then 46 was Kenzie, obviously Charlie and Ben. And they all actually have had pretty big edits. 45
was all big edits because it was Austin, D, and Jake.
Right. Austin, D, Jake. 44, too. Obviously, we have Jam Jam, Carolyn, and Heidi. Honestly, like this is kind of convincing me that it is going to be the Sophie, Rizzo, and Savannah there because I
thought you said you were going to go different. Now you talk.
I know, but now
Christina, now you talked yourself into it.
Well, I do want to be different, but I also don't want to be wrong. I want you to be wrong.
There you go. But I don't think I can be wrong at this point, you know, because I feel like the writing's so blatantly on the wall here.
Yeah.
What are you going
with? This is tricky. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Daryl Seymour saying Ben was almost invisible in the second half of 46. Yeah, like Sophie B, I agree. Like, but Ben was a huge part, like the whole narrative of his tribe, whatever it was called, was about like how he set the tone and it was like the Vibes tribe and it was all like Ben and like rocking out. I mean, he was just like such a major part of that. So I do think like Sophie B is a losing finalist. The question is Rizzo a losing finalist or is he like number two or is he number four? And I just don't know. Like, are they giving Christina? But the other thing that complicates this too is like both Rizzo and Savannah are on 50. So obviously they're both getting huge edits. So like Rizzo's not getting overshadowed in this edit by Christina, you know, even if he was four instead of two. But it's not like a really quite, like, is anyone worried? They kind of also have to have the finale. They don't want it to be a blowout, although maybe they do want it to be a blowout because Savannah's on 15, you know, and then they're like, hey, look at this. I am going to go this three is in the finals, though. I think that's like, gosh, sorry, Phil.
You tricked me.
Sorry, I did trick you. I said I was going to do something different.
I got to take the StephenFishback.com out of the description of the video. I'm sorry, everybody. You made it this far in. Never mind. Everything I said in the first 10 minutes, I take back. Yeah. I get it, though. So if Christina goes at four and she's out now, so we have the same final three. I know you were talking about the edit and everything like that and confessionals. I always like to look at confessional numbers. Savannah's got 72. Sophie Bellardi has 64. She's not that far behind. Like, if you go and you look at some of the other people you've mentioned, like, Ben ended up 40 or 50 confessionals behind Charlie and Kenzie. Heidi was, I think, 60 confessionals behind Jam Jam. Like, there's normally bigger gaps here. Rizzo's sitting there behind Sophie Bellardi, which is shocking because not only is he on season 50, he's also been like a star, or like, you know, he kind of feels like what Jeff wants from Gen Z right now. Totally. So that's pretty interesting that he's behind Sophie Bellardi. Is there a world, where Sophie Bellardi is just liked more than Rizzo and Savannah and wins the game?
I mean, there is a world, but I don't think we're in that world. Because I do think she would have had a little bit more to justify her edit. I mean, there's that world. It's hard because of the 50 thing. Like, you know, it's so, she really disappeared. I mean, I guess you're saying she didn't actually really disappear because she's a ton of confessionals. But I felt like she was less perceived to be the driving strategic force for a lot of that group's decisions in a way where, you know, you had, it felt like more you saw Rizzo working, you saw Savannah working. We didn't really see Sophie working. You know, sometimes we saw her like vacillating of whether she should turn on Savannah and Rizzo or not, but we didn't really see her like, you know, doing strategy so much. And so, you know, every so often you'd get like her talking to Sage, like, yeah, I really do need to turn on Savannah. But we didn't really see her kind of like pulling together a vote. So I do still think she loses. I feel kind of good about that call, but I don't know. I mean, that's kind of been the number two possibility of like, does Sophie B kind of just like have like likability where, you know, she does have those we've seen those relationship with Sage, you know, we've seen that relationship with Sophie Segretti, you know, we saw her relationship with everybody, honestly, like we've seen her with Alex, like maybe like she does pull it out. But if so, why is she so eager to defend herself on Twitter? Like, why can't these people calm down on Twitter? It's so hard to defend. So this was Savannah too.
That's what I'm wondering as well. I mean, I think also like we're just in that day and age. I mean, what, you played season 18 and 31. So you played in an era where, you know, I feel like 25, 26 is when Jeff started to focus more on social media. I know the Caramoan. We're watching all the seasons in order for our Patreon, and we just did Caramoan. Jeff at that finale is like hashtag this, hashtag that, hashtag everything, hashtag Rudy Bosch just called Richard a word we can't say on TV anymore. You know, he's hashtagging everything,
right?
And I feel like going into yours, it was like kind of still in like its infancy of like really getting reality TV to be like that. I feel like at this point, like the trolls are so bad on the internet,
yeah,
that I feel like the players have just gotten to the point where they're like, if production and CBS aren't going to protect us in any way, I'm going to protect my own sanity by just telling people that they're wrong. And so I think they're getting more defensive.
I do think you're right about that, that the culture has gotten more toxic, so people are getting more defensive. I do think there is that element. But like every so often, like CBS lawyers will just send out like a blanket cease and desist, be like, stop saying these things, you know? You know, it's interesting that like, and just generally like the winner hasn't felt that need because they won, you know, they feel like their actions are going to be justified. They don't have to like get in the trenches. And Tony, you know, I guess it sounds like you're almost at 28. Tony was really, was always the exception because he was, I mean, Tony's the exception. He was fighting a ton on Twitter, in those days, as I can testify. He was, you know, Tony's always the exception, right? The things that nobody else should be able to pull off, Tony can pull off. So maybe Savannah's the new Tony, you know, Rizzo's getting some Tony comparisons. Maybe it's really Savannah who's the new Tony.
So, yeah, I mean, we'll see. But so let me just talk about this post-merge confessional counts. Again, I love confessional counts, and I just want to bring this up before we talk about these final three. So post-merge, I mean, total season, Christina has 31 confessionals, okay? Right. Everybody else has at least that many post-merge. So I'm just going to talk this through because I think it's a lot more even than people realize, and especially when you consider the 50 of it all. Sophie Bellardi has 31 post-merge. Rizzo has 32.
Wow.
Savannah has 34.
Wow. That's wild.
And well, Sage has 37. Yeah. Sage actually has the most.
Yeah. Wow. Well, they say the person going into the finale with the most confessionals usually does not win. So
true.
And in fact, they often that's only the second most confessionals wins, but it's real close. You know, it's normally it's not that close.
Yeah.
Hey, kudos to them for such an evenly edited season with, you know, I mean, certainly in, you know, obviously in 19, we saw like it was 90% Russell. You know, we saw a ton of Malcolm in 24, or sorry, 25. You know, so, you know, kudos to them for, you know, their discretion. That's interesting. So you're kind of saying you're once again, you open this podcast saying I'm not making the case for Sophie B anymore. And yet here you are kind of making the case for Sophie B.
Here's what I found interesting about the finale when she played that thing wrong last time.
Yeah.
She played that wrong and she walked by the jury and kind of had her head in her hands of like, oh, woe is me, self-deprecation, you know, and they were all laughing about it. They didn't seem like we saw eye rolls at Steven Shin's analogy. We saw eye rolls at Rizzo getting up. We didn't see eye rolls at Sophie. We saw shock that Steven was voted out of the game. So I think there would be some respect for Sage or Christina if they got to the end of like, yo, you don't understand the move we pulled off. But they didn't seem pissed at Sophie. I still don't think Sophie has played good enough a game to beat a woman who ties or breaks the female record for immunities and Rizzo, who held an idol for 9 tribal councils or whatever and convinced people of all these different things. But at the end of the day, if they just like her more, that might be what it comes down to. And it's not like she played such a dreadful game that they're sitting there going, well, we love you and we'd rather hang out with you, but we just simply cannot vote for you. She didn't play that kind of game. She just made a huge blunder, but she was playing a solid, decent game throughout. And I think the other thing helping her right now is out of the final, when they were down 7-3, right? It doesn't feel like Rizzo, Savannah, and Sophie are the sole reason that they regained this 3-2 advantage. Other players have made those decisions for them. Like Sage decided to vote out Sophie. It wasn't some crazy move by Savannah or Rizzo. Sage did that. Sage decided to vote out Steven. Rizzo and Savannah didn't even know that was coming. So I just think that none of them played this like Chris Doherty, Danny Boatwright, we totally took over. We had to when our back was against the wall and we made it to the end. But, you know, I still think ultimately she's going to lose. That's my pitch. That's what I got.
I don't know. I mean, I think we saw some real clutch maneuvers from Rizzo and Savannah. And honestly, like from my perspective, more Rizzo, like apparently I've given Savannah no fishies, which was a surprise to me. I was,
wow.
But I've given Rizzo a bunch, you know, that MC boot, we really saw them work it where it did look like they were going to put votes on Rizzo. And then suddenly, you know, Rizzo and Savannah show up. Or Savannah shows up and then they, you know, Rizzo like pulls in Sophie Segretti. And then, you know, suddenly it is on MC, you know, the next episode I really did think, but then bringing in Sophie, I thought was great. Like, but bringing in both Sophies, trying to like, look like which actual, boots, but I do think there was enough there where it felt like they were kind of saving themselves week to week, even if they weren't masterminding the votes, they were kind of keeping the votes off of themselves.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you know, the thing that like, you know, I've always heard or thought about the new era Survivor is, you know, the two, you have to like be the contestant the jury likes more, but you also have to give them like enough of a reason, you know, and that was Marianne and her idol, right? Okay. Like, did Marianne play a better game than Mike? I don't know. I mean, she had the Omer move, I guess, but then she had like just enough, right? She's like, I've got my secret idol and I voted out Omer, my ally. Like, and the jury wanted to vote for her and she gave them enough of a reason. Like overall, like was Mike probably like a bigger force this season? I honestly don't remember. So I can't say for sure. I really like literally don't remember, but I you know, people probably debate that. You know, I do think that's like, you know, same with Kenzie, right? You just have to give the people who want to vote for you anyway, enough of a reason to vote for you. And so, I don't think Sophie has done that post-merge and even like pre-merge, you know, I mean, it was really Alex's decision, right? Who he was sending home with her or Jeremiah. So like, is it, you know, where, I just don't know. I mean, was it, you know, where, like, what is she going to do to say I did enough to earn this vote?
Yeah. So what's your prediction then for this final three? What's the order?
I kind of think, I mean, does Rizzo get the, like, does it, is it like Savannah? Is it Savannah, Sophie, Rizzo? Cause again, like, who's voting for Rizzo? You know, like, I can see him joining Team No Votes here. If it's like Savannah, Sophie, and Rizzo in the finals, I mean, maybe Juwan votes for Rizzo. I keep on giving Juwan credit for this.
Yeah, you're making Juwan feel like not a sore loser, which is nice. I don't know.
Right. I loved Juwan. I mean, Juwan.
He was my winner pick. I was the fan of the whole season.
He was such a fun character. I mean, I'm bummed Juwan's not on 50. But I do think both Rizzo and Savannah have earned their spots on 50. And certainly, if Savannah ends up winning out, that would be really remarkable and absolutely deserve to return. You know, more than some of the people on 48. I mean, everyone's like, oh, why five people from the last two seasons? I feel like Savannah and Rizzo have done enough here.
Mm-hmm.
What about you? Where are you, Phil?
I mean, for me, I'm at, you know, we just didn't need 12 new era players, especially if you weren't going to separate the new era and old school players 4-4-4-4-4-4 on the three tribes. Like, there's one that's 5-3. What are we doing? So you didn't need 12 and 12. You could have easily just given us more pre 40, which is what everybody wanted. I thought I was going to go against you here, and I was like, oh man, finally I'll get, but no, I think Sophie's going to get second. I think Savannah's going to win. I think Sophie's going to get second. Alex. And I think we could be in a situation of a 5-2-1, just like we were last season, where all three people get a vote at tribal council, because maybe Rizzo does get one. I think Sophie could get Alex's vote, because Alex says, look, you navigated this. I'm impressed that you're sitting here. Maybe she gets Christina's vote. I don't know, but I don't think she's going to get enough votes. And I think the problem is Savannah and Rizzo are in that classic situation of, we played very similar games. So if one of us wins final tribal council, we're probably going to win over all of the people who are split between us. And I think that that's ultimately going to lead to Savannah getting more votes. If I was just watching this, like, without having known the edit as well as I know the edit of the show, I would think Rizzo was playing a better game. I do think he's playing a better game. But when you watch the jury roll their eyes at him when he gets up to not play his idol again, no way. No way.
Yeah. It's interesting. It's a tough call, because like, the decision to not play an idol is so momentous, right? Yeah. For him to hold it week to week. But you want to communicate that to the jury. And I get that. I get the motivation from him. Like, he wants to communicate, like, I'm doing something big by doing nothing. You know, I certainly had that challenge in Token Chains. And of course, I'm a reality TV contestant, so everything relates back to me. So I had that challenge in Token Chains where, you know, you want the jury to see the game you're playing, but you also like don't want to be like, look at me, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's so tricky for him. Like, I wonder if after the fact, if he loses, will he regret some of that showmanship? But it's easy to regret things afterwards. You can point to any number of things and be like, maybe that, you know.
He's also on 50, probably for this showmanship. You can't tell me Jeff doesn't love all of it.
Right. Oh, for sure. That's a really good point. And Jeff said that, right? Like, you guys are playing for 50 to make a show. So then he went and did that. Like, you can't be mad about it.
No. God, I know. I think about it all the time with you, Aaron, and JT all the time. I'm like, what if Steven takes his wins and takes JT and takes Aaron? What happens in that world?
I would win. I know that, like, I don't even think I would win necessarily against Coach, but I would have won against Aaron.
Okay. I love it. I've always said Aaron and Taj should have played Survivor again. And it's crazy to me that neither one.
Both of them. Really wild.
There's an old commercial that I always bring up in like my real life of the lime green hatchback. I don't know if you remember this, but it's like an eBay commercial essentially. And it's like, who the hell would want a lime green hatchback? And there's a guy in there who goes, oh my God, a lime green hatchback. And he's just like all dressed in lime green and everything. That's how I felt when Tyson did the podcast with Aaron, where I was like, oh my God, it's a lime green hatchback. It's what I want. And nobody else is clamoring for now. I was so pumped. So
that's fun. Yeah. I mean, Aaron is also still like a very astute, you know, she always, you know, I always think she's off, like, you know, she's got like four kids and, you know, so like, I think she's like, she's up, but then she's like, has like great takes, like very interesting, very insightful. Yeah.
Love her. But anything else that you want to bring up here before we close this out? And we went a little bit over an hour here. I feel like we talked through almost every scenario. I mean, you know, I feel like we're both in agreement. I mean, we literally have the same final five here. We have the same
prediction. Same order. Sorry, Phil. You wanted to do something different, and I just like followed you.
I know. Well, you followed me, and then I thought, I was like, I'll let him go first because he'll never have this take. And then you had the same take, and I'm like,
that's good. That speaks well for us. At least if we're wrong together. Like, that's what I want. I just want deniability. Well, Phil was wrong.
Yeah, I love that. But yeah, so okay. But give another plug for your book, Escape.
Well, if you've listened to an hour and 5 minutes of a podcast about reality show, I do think you will enjoy this book, Escape by Stephen Fishbeck. Now is a great time to buy it because, first of all, if you buy it on barnesandnoble.com, you get to be entered for in a sweepstake for Escape merch, which is a hat that says Escape across the front with an exclamation point. I'm going to wear this hat everywhere. I like designed the hat that I would want to wear. So, you know, go to the park with your Escape hat and see the people run in fear. And also there's a t-shirt. There is a bookmark that says Escape into a good book. And there is also a $100 Barnes & Noble gift card. Ooh. So now is a great time to buy Escape if you are planning to buy it at all. Also, if you buy a hardcover and you email me at escapefishback@gmail.com, which again sounds like a horror novel. Escapefishback@gmail.com.
Do I have to put an exclamation point after escape in that?
No. Yeah, that's what I said. Escape fishback.
You've been screaming it. So when you screamed it there, I was like, really? No.
Well, I did use the exclamation point font. You're right. But then we'll give you a map that Eric, I don't know if this is a map or like a drawing of the island, but anyway, Eric Reichenbach is drawing the island that Escape is set on, and it's gonna look really cool, and I will send you a copy of it if you email me after having purchased a hardcover before the book is out.
I love that. I will probably be buying a hardcover because I want the map, because
the map is cool. Truly, like, buy the hard book. Yeah, it's gonna be cool.
Yeah, anybody who's like not super familiar, Eric was telling me when I had him on earlier this season, and he was saying how people don't realize he's Dabu Doodles. They don't realize that's him.
Oh, yeah, they think that's like some fan. They think it's like
a fan doing it. And then every now and then he'll be like, no, this is Eric from 16. And like, oh my God, this is crazy. So you can get something of Steven, his book. You can get Eric's drawing. I mean,
and be entered to win all this cool merch by buying a barnesandnoble.com.
And as a true, you know, artist, a true smart person, you can get $100 Barnes & Noble gift card to go buy 4 Criterion movies. Instead of buying books. So there you go.
Right. Think about that. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I go to Barnes & Noble.
This is quite a plug, Phil. Thank you very much. Really. Yeah. This is above and beyond. I just thought I'd be talking about Survivor and holding my book, but you really like sold it. I want to go buy my book.
I'm telling you. Look at that. So now Steven has sold 2 books on this podcast, one to me and one to himself. He actually is just going to be like, I have to get a second one. The one you have there is not a hardcover, is it?
No, this is a galley. I don't know if you know about book production, but before this gets sent to like reviewers and people who blurb the book and like, you know, cultural influencers so they can read the book and get everyone so excited about it. But it's like, you know, I mean, it was cool to like see. Like, it actually looks like the cover, which I really like. You know, it's got this sort of like almost like psychedelic junglescape. Mm-hmm. When this is like a warped flower, but it also reminds me of like my protagonist kind of like journeying into this like crazy jungle. And then like, boom, there's a boom mic across it, which I just love.
I love it. I love it. Well, what do you got? Know-it-alls on Wednesday night or Thursday night?
I'm doing it on Thursday because I am old and tired and I can't stay up that late. But I will be podcasting with Rob on Thursday. Rob will have Know-It-All or some podcast. I don't know what they're calling it. Maybe it's something else on Wednesday. I don't know if he's announced the guest, but it's a guest I think is going to be doing an awesome job. So highly recommend you tune in.
There you go. So that'll be Wednesday night over there on RGP. We have Wednesday night, our finale. I know that Tegwith is doing her episode tomorrow. I don't know who it's with. I don't think she actually finalized anybody. So it's either tomorrow or Tuesday, but she's going to do a pre-finale podcast. And then we will have our recap after the finale ends on Wednesday night. So if you want to become a patron, patreon.com/a specialist, we're almost to blood versus water. So we're almost to like what people think like Survivor starts getting better. So if you want to become a top patron, jump in now. We are through the hell that was Nicaragua. Through Caramon, which honestly Caramon is so much better than people give credit for. But anyway,
Caramon was a very fun season. I mean, the pre-merge I didn't love. It was like too much of like Shamar's antics a little bit.
Yeah.
But like I thought like post-merge it was like really, really interesting and fun season. And Philippines is a great season. Like, you know, I mean, that's like an all-time, like, for me, that's one of my favorites ever. I just so
it's really just 21 to 24. That's what I've learned on this rewatch. It really is. The internet's too hard on Caramon. But
I'm curious, like, about 23. In 22, I did not enjoy either of those seasons. But I like 20. I mean, I feel like 21. I've always wondered. Actually, I should say I've wondered if 21 would bear up under a rewatch. And you're saying no,
it didn't for me. I mean, look, here's the thing. So Will is a huge defender of season 21. He loves Fabio. He was like, no, I enjoy watching Nicaragua. Out of the first 26 seasons, I still think he ranked it third or fourth to last.
There's like a lot of people on that season that are like playing well, which is not always the case in that era. Like, even like someone like Alina, you know, was playing well. Like Jill Bem, you know, was playing intelligently. I mean, obviously Marty, like he's the one. Like, how have they not brought back Marty? And maybe he's like aged out at this point, but like the fact that Marty wasn't in the mix for, you know, 26 or, you know, one of the other ones is just mind boggling to me. Second chances. You know, there was just like, I mean, obviously Sash played like a superb game. Obviously there's a lot. There's
that
a lot
weird
of
behind the scenes stuff.
What? I don't buy that. I don't know. And Holly, I mean, you know, whatever. I felt like there was a lot of like interesting gameplay.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll see. Use your book to then become a producer on Survivor so you can get some of the, like, the Sean Rechters and Martys of the world onto the show that we've
Sean all- not being on 40 is crazy to me. Like that's like the one where like, what have you guys been doing? Like Sean Rechter. I mean, like everybody's, we've been wanting to see him back since 2001.
Yeah. Whatever. 2002, 2001, whatever. I think it was 2002.
Whatever it was. Yeah. You know, yeah.
It's like, we all want him back. Anyway, like this video, subscribe to the channel. Steven and I are going to keep blabbing now because now I need to know more about Sean Rechter and, you know, all that. But anyway, that's it, guys. We could keep going for hours, but that's not good for either of us.
Phil, this was so fun. Before you end, I just want to thank you. Thank you for having me on. Truly, like, such an enjoyable podcast. I loved it. I love doing it. And again, like, so much respect for what you have built here. It's awesome.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. And I'm so happy to get you on. I mean, we can get you on for something during 52.
I would love to.
Not 52, like 50 as well. Yeah. 52 is going to be, everybody's going to go back to being like, what? What are we watching? All right. Anyway.
Don't say that. Don't say that. I'm like holding out hope for like
You're doing a double hourglass where you go and you flip it, but then somebody else gets the reverse time turn and it goes back to how it was. And, you know, why not? But anyway. Yeah, it was a pleasure to have you. This was awesome. I hope your book sells thousands and thousands and thousands of copies.
I hope that too. We're so aligned in so many ways. Same boot order, same hopes for my novel.
Isn't that crazy? Isn't that crazy? All right, everybody. We'll see you later.
Bye.